deserves a better class of sports radio. And we're going to give it to him.
This is Talk Sports.
Leave one wolf alive, and the sheep are never safe.
Back in the booth, back on the airwaves, coming at you live from the Fan Run Studios. John Reed, Charlie Collier. Cam Black is on the way. He'll be here momentarily as we kick off this Wednesday, August 10th. Hope you all are having a good day. Charlie, how are you, my friend?
I'm buzzing, John. Football's back.
Nah, agree to disagree.
Did you not watch Hard Knocks?
I saw some clips, but no, I haven't watched it yet. It wasn't appointment TV for me.
You have to watch it.
Let me guess. Dan Campbell said some funny things. Jamal Williams cried.
I know that the couple years past, it hasn't really been appointment viewing. Like, I don't even know if I've made it through an entire season of Hard Knocks the last couple years. But last night, it had me ready to like run through the walls of my apartment for no real reason. I'm not a Lions fan, but I was just entranced by Dan Campbell. Like, I was ready to kill for him. I'm also ready to bet every dollar I've ever made in my entire life on the Detroit Lions. That's just what really kept happening last night, because they were already a team I kind of like a little bit more than people. And then,
no, I think they're a popular sleeper team.
Hearing Jamal and hearing Dan Campbell speak, hearing those coaches speak, the offensive and defensive coordinators going at it, like I was ready to go. Of course, then every once in a while, they throw together some highlights of the defense, and you'd remember, oh wait, this defense isn't actually good, and they can't tackle the Lions offense, so like, who can they tackle? And that's kind of sobering. Then you think, oh, maybe I shouldn't bet all my money on the Lions. But then Dan Campbell said something about, like, you know, biting kneecaps and licking eardrums and whatever weird stuff he says, and I'm right back in.
I will say that the phrase betting all my money on the Detroit Lions usually doesn't end well. So that would be my caution, my caution to you. Although I do agree with you.
Has anyone even tried that before?
I don't know. I don't think they live to tell the story if that happens. But I know that people kind of looked at the Lions as a sleeper team in the NFC, at least to, you know, maybe finish second in that division, get to 8 or 9 wins and have a chance. But I do hate that now everyone's going to like them coming out of Hard Knocks. They're going to be America's team.
Except, man, that defense was – some of those clips, they were really looking bad. Which, granted, I know the Lions have a really good offensive line, but it was pretty bad.
Have we decided who has the advantage early in the season, like early in the process? Is it offense or defense?
Usually the reports are that, out of camp at least, are that defenses are ahead of offenses.
Okay. Takes offenses longer to keep up.
Like, I was reading from like Greg Rosenthal, notes from around training camp, and that's what he said. He's like, yeah, usually, you know, pretty much the report we hear from every camp is defense is ahead of offense. But in the Lions camp, the only thing we keep hearing is that the offense is just dominating the defense, which probably isn't good. But maybe that just means Jared Goff is his MVP season's loading.
He's back to Super Bowl form. Put some respect on his name.
I did think it was weird. I don't think I saw DeAndre Swift once.
But he's been the guy that I've read a lot about out of Detroit. So, like, right. They like him. They like Williams. So, we'll see. I don't want to spend too much time talking about the Detroit Lions, which maybe is camera shy. Which I did read some takeaways, and word I got was that Aiden Hutchinson didn't really do himself any favors. Kind of seems like a jerk. I saw the Billie Jean performance.
Yeah, wait, I was going to say, that was awesome. That had me, I don't even like Michael Jackson or that song, but, like, it had me ready to dance, ready to roll. There's nothing just like a room full of guys at the end of a practice just vibing.
You don't like Michael Jackson's music, or you don't like
his
Michael
music
Jackson?
Or Michael Jackson, really, just both.
You might be the first person I've ever heard say that in terms of his music.
There's like maybe one, two good songs.
I don't think that's a true statement. But either way, Aiden Hutchinson didn't come off like a jerk to you? I saw some highlights where it's like, you know, I only got 13 scholarship offers because everyone knew I was going to Michigan. Only 13.
Well, someone asked him, though.
Yeah, like, but that's a pretentious thing to say.
Not really. He's like, hey, someone asked, it was like a Bina Easy that went to Memphis. He was like, yeah, hey, how many scholarship offers you have? He's like, I only had 13. Like, everyone just knew how I was going to Michigan. My dad played there. I grew up there like I was just going to go to Michigan. I didn't take that
still
as
got 13.
Pretentious.
Okay. Maybe I misread it. Again, I didn't watch it.
I mean, I don't know. Was it pretentious for Bina Easy to then come back at him and be like, yeah, I went to Memphis, but I had offers from every school in the country. I just wasn't from America, so I just, like, didn't realize how it worked, and I just liked the coaches at Memphis.
Do we think that's true, that he had every, like, an offer from every school?
Yeah, he was a four-star with offers from – I don't know if they were committable offers, obviously.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's the key.
He had offers.
Yeah. I never know, which I guess maybe he didn't either, since he said he's not from America, that he didn't realize that he didn't have an offer to every school. It's just like, hey, we're sending you a pamphlet.
I remember his recruitment came down to like Memphis and Ole Miss, and people were like, hey, this is a little weird that he just chose Memphis.
I could see him liking Elvis, maybe. Ole Miss or Memphis, maybe that was it. All right, so Hard Knocks was back.
I'm all the way in on Hard Knocks.
You're all the way in.
Like, I'm waiting to watch next week live. Very, very much looking forward to it.
It is funny, like, the way people have kind of changed their tune on Dan Campbell from kind of a meathead at Miami that we kind of just laughed at whenever he was coaching the Dolphins to now still a meathead, but one we all kind of root for.
I mean, he was ready to cry man tears like 3-4 times last night.
I did see him in the episode with the D's nuts joke, so he did slip one of those in, so good for him for stealing the show there on Hard Knocks. But football not back.
No,
for me,
football's back.
Yet. No.
No, 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 it's back.
I let you guys talk me into it. I'm putting my foot down.
It's back, John. We're literally going to end the Ravens' 20-win streak in the preseason tomorrow night. It was Hard Knocks last night. We got major college football news today. Football is back.
You're not fooling me anymore, Charlie. I let you and Cam trick me into thinking football is here. Even though I tell you every year after SEC Media Days, you get excited, you think it's here, and then it's like Groundhog Day where you get 6 or 7 weeks where you realize, wait, football's not actually here, but we feel like we're supposed to be talking about something new every day, but nothing new happens every day. You'll get a couple of training camp injuries.
You'll get
a couple of notes.
Football is
Jeremy
back.
Banks,
John, I released my ACC predictions today. Football's back.
That doesn't do anything for me.
It should. It was really. I don't feel very good about it either, just to be transparent.
Did you just want to have like the shock value of, wow, Charlie's picking NC State?
I didn't really think that was shocking by any means.
I mean, when I saw it, I was mouth open. I gasped. NC State?
I mean, their over-under is 8.5.
Yeah? But,
like, their win total over-under is 8.5. But to go over 8.5 was, I think, like minus 160.
Okay.
Maybe it was minus 130. So I just have them really winning one more game than Vegas expects them to. Is that really all that shocking?
Well, with all due
when
respect,
they have like a top 15 quarterback, top 10 quarterback, roughly.
All due respect to your ACC predictions, that doesn't signify football being back for me. We're now at the lull where I'm starting to get like just a man. I wish I would have saved a couple vacation days to take over these next couple weeks so I could actually come back when it's just football.
I mean, everyone wishes that they could just hibernate to football, I think, for August, but you can't.
Well, why would you want to do that, Charlie? You just said football was back.
Because it is back. I mean, I'm not going to wish my life away, John. I'm going to appreciate what we have. What we have is a wonderful episode of Hard Knocks.
Dan Campbell.
My ACC predictions. Again, major college football news. And the Titans
is the
ending a...
Is the major
win streak.
College football news your predictions, or is there something else?
No, Sam Hartman.
Yeah, so...
out indefinitely.
I guess that's major college football news, especially if you're like looking at the ACC.
I mean, I would say...
I guess he's a name that probably could have gotten himself in the Heisman contention as well as one of the top returning quarterbacks and should put up numbers, one of the best returning quarterbacks. And it's always scary when you see a non-football injury. Has there been any speculation on what exactly it is?
No.
Okay. Well, I don't want to like. I didn't know.
I mean, it was just non-football medical situations. So
that always seems scary, like blood clots, heart issues, cancer, something of that sort. It's like that's where my mind goes at least when you tell me that. So I don't know if it's something that will get resolved this year. It might be the end of his season. Might be the end of his career. Who knows?
I was pretty sad. I was pretty excited for Wake Forest this year.
What a sick statement.
They just went 10-2.
That's fine.
Won their division. Okay. Top Clemson.
That's all right.
He was a top 10 quarterback heading into the year.
You need different hobbies in your life if you find yourself saying, I was pretty excited for Wake Forest this year.
But I was.
Unless it involves Chris Paul or Tim Duncan.
Sam Hartman, A.T. Perry.
Who?
Their star receiver, A.T. Perry.
Okay.
First team all ACC.
Yeah.
No, that doesn't do anything for you?
No.
Because that Wake team overachieved last year. Like, they won games where they were outgained.
Yeah, I watched them get their ass kicked by North Carolina, though.
So like, they should. I mean, they probably should have dropped a game or two that they didn't. So their only chance to stay, I guess, you know, towards the top was just Sam Hartman and A.T. Perry going stupid. And
I haven't forgiven Dave Clawson either. So
for what?
I mean, for coming here and helping run this program into the ground. And I know a lot of people say it wasn't necessarily his fault that Fulmer kind of wouldn't let him do his thing, but like, he was an offensive coordinator here, and that was, I want to say, the last year of Fulmer's tenure here.
Maybe he should have been allowed to do the slow mesh.
Maybe. But they didn't let him do that, so it was a big time disaster.
It was invented by then, honestly.
The phrase, the claw fence, has a different connotation here in Knoxville than it does in the rest of college football. But Cam Black's in the building. I'm sorry that we started the show with the Detroit Lions and Wake Forest football, but we
two
do
notable
have,
winners.
We'll come back with America's the sports sweethearts. Story of the day that's not Detroit or Wake
Sam
Forest.
Sam Harbin was going to be my sports story of the day.
Well, we'll come back with something different. Stick with us as Talk Sports on Fan Run Radio. Back on the program, Cam. Good to see you.
Yeah,
doing good today.
Good to be CC. Yeah, I'm doing well.
Do your whole spiel about how we're getting closer to football. We've already just talked about.
I know.
That,
so. I heard y'all. So
Cam,
I'm not going to get into that.
Football's back, right?
We're
closer
back
to football.
Yeah, I watched.
What game did you guys watch last night?
Hard Knocks.
What game you guys want to break down?
Hard Knocks.
Yeah.
Hall of Fame.
We didn't do a deep breakdown of the Hall of Fame game if we need to.
We talked enough.
Slaughter time.
We talked about it.
Slaughter got
getting
cut.
The late over.
You see, he got cut, though, right? Slaughter got cut. And they signed somebody else.
Who got cut?
The third string Jacksonville quarterback.
You know what? He did his job. He did. He got America R over.
Is it America's over?
I guess he's not needed anymore. His services are through.
It's not good for the preseason under trend from last year. Last year, week one, preseason unders were 14-3.
Well, that's why I hopped on the under over.
Makes sense. Swing of.
Don't feel too smart. A third string quarterback that just got cut went down the field with, you know, with one
don't
drive
feel,
left.
But it was also.
It's fine. You were there watching it, and you're like, oh my God, these guys.
I was so mad.
This future UPS driver is out here determining how happy I'm going to be tonight.
I think that's definitely a high school quarterback's coach.
Okay, maybe. Okay, he's going to wish he became a UPS driver because they make way more money than high school quarterback coaches, but. Either way, that's what you, that's how
well,
you
was,
spent
no,
your
it was,
Thursday
it was
night.
20, it was 20 to 3 at like
I
halftime.
Know. I understand, but the problem is there has to be a second half, and all of a sudden the really bad players are in the third quarter. And
but
the
sometimes
really bad
that
players,
works out where the defense are the you know is worse. And
no, not usually. Usually, like you might get a couple turnovers maybe that like hooks you up. But for
we
the
got
most
our
part,
over. It doesn't matter when it happened.
It
we got
matter.
The over.
It does matter. There's a such thing as a right side wrong result, and you were on the wrong side, but you got the right.
I would
result.
Say I was definitely. I feel like if they wouldn't have scored any points in the second half, then I would have had right side wrong result.
I don't
or
think so.
Wrong side.
I don't think
right
result. I don't think you can complain about a preseason game going scoreless in the second half because it's a preseason game, especially the
fair.
Hall of Fame game. No, you can't.
Scoreless in an entire
that
half?
That has to be an assumption that they might not score at any time because the coaches don't care about scoring and the players, again, are staring
you
know down.
You owe it to the fans that made the trek to Canton, Ohio.
That's actually sad.
Or
the
just
people
the residents of Ohio that are stuck in Ohio, and that's what they have to do.
Oh, that no. is bad that they have to it's get excited worse. For it every year. It's like if you're a Dayton fan, like you probably love seeing, hey, the first four in tournament, March Madness. It's in Dayton. Let's go see it. Like that's yeah. probably actually pretty fun.
If you
in Canton,
Dayton,
they're like, hey, let's go see the Hall
person.
Of Fame game. And you're like, oh, God.
Dayton's the worst. I despise Dayton.
I had no issues when I went.
I have a lot of issues with Dayton.
Okay.
The city or the team?
The school.
Okay.
The city's like not great either, but mostly the school.
It was easy in and easy out. I didn't spend much time there.
That city is ruined AJ Green.
Oh.
This is a weird reference that I don't know where you're going with.
When he stepped on the loose turf on the Dayton's football field, that's also just the community turf field, and blew out his ACL when they were doing a practice in front of their Dayton fans, and like that was the end of AJ Green.
Nope.
Well, that happens. So
that
okay.
Are we taking him the same AJ Green?
Receiver, right? AJ Green?
Yeah.
Okay.
I just thought he kept getting hurt, like on the.
Well, that was what started
like,
it.
Actually, like with the Bengals. But either way, that's too much Hall of Fame game talk.
Well,
for me.
Yeah. How did we get
apparently
back to that?
Slaughter got replaced by EJ Manuel.
Former first round pick.
I did not know he was in the league.
EJ Perry. It was EJ Perry.
Oh, EJ Perry.
I was going to be much more of a story if it was EJ Manuel hanging around.
That would have been. Is EJ Perry the Brown quarterback?
Yes.
I actually liked him a lot.
That's also a very sad statement to say.
I mean, he was pretty good in the Shrine game. Yeah, Shrine game.
Roger Goodell. My story of the day was Roger Goodell breaking his silence over Deshaun Watson. To me, it is the final, or I guess can't be the final because we haven't actually got the hammer dropped in. But it's a big nail in the coffin. We got one more to put in there, but it's another nail in the coffin for Deshaun Watson's 2022 season.
Mm-hmm.
Because Goodell came out and basically was like, we don't agree with what Sue ruled, obviously. We appealed. But also, like, even Sue Robinson came out and confirmed and said that the evidence showed that there were multiple violations here. They were egregious. They were predatory. And those are the things that we always felt were important for us to address in a way that's responsible. So basically, Sue said there were multiple big-time violations here where this guy's a creep like we all think. The evidence shows that. She said that as much in her statement.
Yeah, she did.
It's a little crazy that she got off with just being able to give six games and quoting precedent and understood that she was like, hey, the worst we've ever done for domestic violence is six games or domestic, you know, misbehavings. Not necessarily violence, I guess, since she tried to verify or try to clarify it wasn't violent in nature, although I think a lot of women would disagree with that. But either way, four instances of that at least that were brought to him. It's safe to assume that there was more going on, obviously. And Goodell says, we're using those findings, and we are going to seek a harsher punishment. At least a season.
I mean, first of all, it just feels weird that both Sue L. Robinson and the NFL can come to these kind of conclusions, and they're still, like, the grand courts in Texas couldn't even find enough to take it to trial.
Yeah.
That's still the baffling part to me. But
I don't know though, like, I know that, like, in our culture, and, like, you know, I remember like how far we've come, you know, really since I've been in college, and it was kind of scary being a college age student back then. It was like, hey, even if you, like, have sex with someone and they're drunk, that's, you're, like, treading on thin ice there. Like, if they tell you it's okay when you're drunk, that doesn't count as consent. So they could come back and get you and say retroactively that you took advantage of them. That's like where we started in like 2012, right? And now here we are in 2022, and obviously we've gone even further with the Me Too movement and putting people in uncomfortable positions, especially if you are a man in power. But I still don't know if that's like illegal. Like, I don't think that's illegal. So I think that's what the state of Texas found. Like, hey, is it creepy for a man to go in here and try to get a massage and then take it further? Is it illegal if he doesn't forcibly make you do it? I think that's why the state of Texas was just like, no, because it's not illegal. Is it intimidation? Is it sexually deviant? Yes. Is it something the NFL wants their $230 million quarterback doing and then getting rewarded for and then like not getting a real punishment for? Obviously not. So I think that's the difference there. Texas is like, hey, we can't lock you up for making women uncomfortable. You didn't force yourself on
them. I thought it was a little bit more
them.
Than making them uncomfortable.
You had basically the
based
girls,
on the accusations.
I mean, the ones I saw were basically the girls were like, hey, he started asking if I would put my hands and mouth on him, and I said either yes or no, and then that was it. Like, it wasn't like he would, again, necessarily force themselves into it.
Weren't there, like, accusations that he was stimulating himself, basically? And
yeah, which, again, I don't know if that's illegal or not either. Like, I don't know what the rules
are there.
I guess,
like, Louis C.K. also didn't go to jail.
I don't know what the legalities of that are in that setting. I don't know.
It's not like public indecency, because it's technically a private setting.
Right.
So
like, I don't
feel like it's
know.
Definitely something.
It is in the NFL side. The NFL is like, hey, we're not letting this go. You're a creep.
Yeah.
But either there wasn't enough evidence, which is also important. Like, if those acts are technically illegal,
that's the hardest.
And
like, one of
the
hardest things
said,
to provide evidence
said, you know?
For.
Right. So, like, the evidence has to be there in a criminal case. Like, I understand Texas looking at that and saying, well, we don't have proof of this happening, so we can't necessarily do anything to you. But that doesn't, you know, obviously vindicate him and, you know, make him clear to play football. So I think that's where the NFL and Texas differs.
I do think it's still pretty crazy, but as far as this has gotten, but he still has just denied everything. And still he's like, nope, I don't need any help. I'm good.
Has shown no contrition at all. Yep. Like, and I do think that plays a part of why the NFL was not willing to let it go with six games. Like, if it had been six games and a big fine, and Deshaun Watson's up there crying, talking about, I'm sorry, I messed up, I'm getting help, I'm getting treatment, I didn't realize what I was doing wrong, but I know I hurt people, and I'm never going to do it again. Mm-hmm. I think the NFL might have looked at that and said, six games, big fine, you're crying, we can work with that. But instead it was six games, no money, I did nothing wrong, why would I get treatment? You're the problem, not me. And then you had the Browns come out and try to gaslight everybody into saying that Deshaun Watson was being apologetic when we have all the evidence that he has not been.
Mm-hmm.
That's the combination that the NFL looked at and said, no, 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 we can't do that.
Yeah, bad move by the Browns PR there.
Well, you know, anybody here in Knoxville who roots for the Vols is no stranger to Jimmy Haslam and his people, you know, not necessarily having the best PR or the sharpest mind when it comes to how to handle scandals. So not really surprised there that – I do feel for Browns fans. I do.
Some of them.
I mean, I understand that some of them are going to be like, hey, it's tribalism. Your guys are good guys, and they're innocent, and everyone else is wrong. I understand
that
mindset of sports fans.
They could have
at
least, again, like, waited a day before they started just giving him a standing ovation at training camp. Like, yeah, way to beat the case. Only six games.
Well, what I will say, what I will say, and it's not excusing anybody, but I feel like if you're at training camp, you're a sicko. Not sexually a sicko, but like you love the
That's
team.
That's not
so,
fair.
You love the team
because I go to training camp. Yeah, but if the Titans signed Deshaun, I would still just be at training camp booing him.
Well, I don't know if you would or not. That's up to you to say. I think you would eventually look over it, look past it, because
it's
you're
not
like,
true.
Do you like Jeffrey Simmons?
Yeah, but like
Jeffrey Simmons beat up a woman.
He hit her in defense of another woman.
In defense of his sister, but not in defense of
when
him.
When he was like 18,
doesn't
and
matter.
He's shown remorse, and he's. Like, shown the
he hit a woman.
He sought a second chance.
He
like
hit
he's
a woman.
Earned a second chance.
He hit a woman.
Deshaun Watson has shown no remorse, has made no apologies, asked for no second chance. It's entirely different.
It's
and
not,
there's,
it's, you can't say it's entirely there's, different.
There's also
he hit a woman.
24 more instances of Deshaun Watson doing bad things than Jeffrey Simmons.
That's fine. He hit a woman. As a 300-pound monster of a man, he hit a woman.
He's probably like 290 in high school.
Still a monster of a man. He had a woman, and I love Jeffrey Simmons. Don't cut that together. Let's put a pause there. But, like, I don't try to – do I think Jeffrey Simmons is a bad person? No. But, like, I just feel like
– But if Jeffrey
if he played
Simmons,
for a different team, if he played for a different team, I might not like him as much.
But if Jeffrey Simmons –
like Tyreek Hill
in his
goes to the Dolphins.
4 years at Mississippi State didn't seek a second chance, didn't show remorse, like, didn't try to grow and better himself as a person, then I would not have been – like in approval of that Titans draft pick, but he did.
Like, what did he do? A bunch of things like in the community I missed because I just saw like Dan Mullen. I was like, no, he's a good guy.
No, yeah, he was doing a lot in the Mississippi State community.
Like going like doing like domestic violence training and like giving speeches and stuff you know, like that or what? Like I mean like
I mean,
what did he do in the
it's
community?
It's like 5-6 years removed now. Like I don't remember specific
like,
instances, but I remember that he was doing things to earn that second chance.
I just saw Dan Mullen's like, yeah, he made a mistake. We're going to give it to him, and he's a good person. Which, for Dan Mullen, who's there to win football games, it's understandable. And obviously we all looked at it and was like, hey, if it happens again under your watch, Dan Mullen, it's going to be worse for you. And obviously Jeffrey Simmons didn't make any more mistakes. But I miss like him going and doing a bunch of stuff to try to talk about how
I mean,
he
made public apologies. Mm-hmm. Like, talked about it publicly and – I think he's shown that he's grown as a person. Again, Deshaun Watson still not even apologetic. Still no remorse. Still no, you know.
Deshaun Watson's worse.
No,
I don't want to act like
okay.
they're comparable.
You said
well, I'm just saying you act like,
don't act like they were comparable. You just compared them.
No. They are comparable. They are both violence against women. They are comparable, but one is worse. When you compare something, you could say this is worse. What Deshaun Watson did
is
worse.
Like comparing like a tomato to a peach and being like, well, they're both fruit.
Well, fruit can be compared. I'm just saying, like, it's easy to say, like, hey, if this was on my team, I would not cheer for him. Whenever we have a guy that has a checkered past. I'm sure you rooted for Pac-Man Jones whenever he was there, like with the Titans. Like, it's just tribalism.
Well,
it's not you. It's every fan.
I was rooting
fan.
For Pac-Man Jones because I was 8 and he jumped on goalposts.
Okay, I mean, that's fine. But
like, that was enough for me.
When I say you, I'm not necessarily meaning just you. I'm talking about sports fans.
Yeah,
because
which is fair.
If they're on your team, you're going to root for them. Like, it happened here in Knoxville. Whenever A.J. Johnson had his accusations, Knoxville defended him. We didn't know the evidence. We didn't know what happened, and he won in the courtroom, so, like, you were vindicated with that. But, like, when that initially happened, everyone defended A.J. Johnson
like
for the most
part. It's happened
with
other players. Like, we didn't defend Vaughn Pearson. Like,
we didn't hang
defend...
around. He was – they get if you,
A.J.
It,
didn't hang around. I mean, well, he hung around the community.
Right, he hung around the community, right.
He just
right,
lived there,
right,
but
– right. He did not get to play his last few games here. You are correct. But he was still – like, he had done enough. He was still kind of a Vol, right? Like, we still kind of defended him. And we ended up, again, winning the court case. I say we because the people who defended him got some vindication there. I'm not saying, like, just you, Charlie. I just mean, like, if you're at training camp, though, you're a diehard. If you're there watching –
training camp is fun.
Well, it
training
might be, but
awesome.
I have no interest in going to it.
Really?
I feel like I'm a big fan, but I don't want to go sit outside and watch training camp. No, the Titans sent me an invitation. I said, take a hold of it. I said, nope, don't want to go.
Oh, I – like, that's one of my, like, the saddest things for me about living in Knoxville now is I don't get to go to Titans training camp.
Same. I went to Falcons camp every year.
You guys are sickos. But you both consider yourselves sickos. And again,
openly.
That Deshaun Watson is, just sicko for
no,
your
like
team.
Just
right.
The kind of guy that's staying up at 3 in the morning to figure out if Tulane can find that fourth win. Like, that kind of sicko.
And again, I just wanted to clarify because I've called Deshaun Watson a sicko, but I want to make sure that I'm saying you're not that type of sicko, but still a sicko. Because I think going to see training camp, it's kind of sick. But those are your diehards.
No, it's kind of sick.
And those are the ones who are going to defend their quarterback. That's just
I actually just
happen.
Had a memory pop up on my Snapchat today from a fight at Titans training camp like 5 years ago.
Who was it?
It was pretty sick. Oh, it was like everyone.
Either one of them, anybody any good? Any
I mean, I don't remember now. It was just a big old mosh pit of bodies.
I gotcha. I didn't know if it was like a Cortland Finnegan situation out there. But
I love football fights.
Roger Goodell broke his silence. When you look at the person that is, you know, hearing the appeal, it's a guy who basically works hand in hand with the NFL as advisor. They used him in the Ezekiel Elliott case. The NFL got what they wanted there. It's pretty much understood that the NFL is going to get what they want here. And I think if I'm a Browns fan, I'm bracing for Deshaun Watson being out for at least a season. I would hope that, like, Deshaun Watson's camp has realized we're not winning this, so let's go back to the table and negotiate 12 games. Give us 12 games or 10 games. That's what the NFL initially wanted. Let's do that. Let's compromise. Don't do a full season. I'm sorry. I'll say I'm sorry. I'll give you some money. Just let us play this year.
I don't think he'll do that. I think they should, obviously, but I mean, based on everything all of his actions since the accusations – point towards him completely trying to defend himself and all or nothing.
Yep, which you can easily come out and say, look, a plea deal isn't an admission of guilt. Anyone who's ever had a legal matter knows that. Yeah. Like, sometimes a plea deal is just like, hey, I don't want to have to go to court. I'll take what I can get because I don't want to rely on, like, the jury to make the right decision. You can also say, look, I know this game is rigged. Mm-hmm. Rather than get a full year with Roger Goodell, I'll give you 8 games and a fine. And I still don't think I did anything wrong, but whatever. I don't want to miss another season of my prime because I already missed one last year for different reasons. But still, I don't want to miss 2 seasons when I'm in my mid-20s and at the top of my game.
Yeah, so plea deal can, like, speed it up to the process. Yeah, so you're not ending up like Ezekiel Elliott where you're in limbo forever and then you get hit with your – suspension at, like, you know, could be a playoff push time, and then you're getting hit with a suspension, and then your team's in danger there.
If you go ahead and do your 8 to 10 games, you have a chance of being back for the last 7 and, you know, get hot and make the playoffs, and then you can hopefully, if you're a Brown, you know, go out and try to win a championship or at least win some games in the playoffs.
So the thing that I'm lacking clarity on here, you know, I know it's something that you had originally discussed when Sue L. Robinson first made her decision. How does this play out now? Like, does this find a way to settle itself before the season starts? And if it doesn't, is Deshaun Watson eligible to play in the meantime?
What will happen next is that the appointed arbiter or the new appointed appeal here will make his decision, I would imagine, in the next week or so. Maybe a Friday news dump. Who knows?
I hope it's before Friday because if you get before Friday, then he can't play in the preseason game if they extend it.
Okay. then
I think they play Friday.
I kind of
so.
Hope he plays in a preseason game and just that.
Well, I mean, that's the way it's trending. Even if it sticks at six, he can play. If the decision takes longer, he's going to be able to play in the preseason. So, and they said the plan is to play him if he's eligible. So
Peter C. Harvey is the guy's name who is hearing the appeal. I would imagine he makes his decision. But then the NFLPA and Deshaun Watson will have the chance to threaten or actually like file a lawsuit and try to take it to court to argue that like they've broken rules. I think.
Yeah, one of those like restraining things. I can't remember the exact term for it, but. Yeah.
That they would get approval to basically still play while they hear the appeal. But I would imagine that will get shut down pretty quickly because all of this is covered in the CBA that the players agreed upon, which is we have a neutral arbiter, in this case, Sue L. Robinson, make her decision. Both sides, as Roger Goodell pointed out in his statement, have the ability to appeal. If the punishment's too harsh, the players can say, hey, this is too harsh. We're appealing.
Yep.
If it's not harsh enough, like the NFL is saying, they can appeal. Then they get another person to come in and make the decision. That person is Peter C. Harvey, who is appointed by Roger Goodell. But all of that is agreed upon in the CBA. So if they do go to court, I would imagine any judge worth his or her weight and salt would look at that and say, sorry, this is black and white. It's clear cut. This is thrown out. And
so I guess just as I sit here, August 10th, first game, September 11th, so pretty much a month.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. What are the odds that then Deshaun Watson gets to play week one because all of this isn't resolved?
10% is what I would say.
10%?
Yeah. I would say there's a 10% chance Deshaun Watson's on the field week one.
I think we get the decision this week before the preseason game just because the NFL doesn't want him on the field. So I think they're going to try to get that done before, you know, he steps out there at all. And then, yeah, whatever appeal process they try to do, I think you can have that wrapped up easily within the month so he's not touching the field again.
Them trying to force the hands by filing, like, a lawsuit and then taking it to, like, federal court, which, again, I think it's pretty clear-cut, black and white. And I know the NFLPA has said, like, hey, we're going to fight this, but I don't really know what leg they have to stand on because, again, it's been agreed upon by both parties that this is the process that plays out when it comes to
appeal. And I feel like even if they appeal or try to take it to federal court, I feel like you could still deny that little restraining order kind of thing and keep him off the field by saying, hey, well, you already agreed to at least six games, so why would we let him play in those first six games?
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm not sure the whole legality of that. But
I don't know. They could also throw it like on the commissioner's exempt list or whatever. Mm-hmm. But like I said, 10% chance, and I feel like that's a little too high that he'll play week one. But Roger Goodell broke his silence. To me, that was the story of the day. We also got some college football news that's not Sam Hartman related. That's really got me a little annoyed. We'll dive into that next. It's in the SEC. Stick with us. It's Talk Sports on Fan Run Radio.
And death on the
back on the program. I really hate this rule change that the SEC has helped pass.
Oh no, what have they done now?
They're never good.
If you complain enough, I guess you get your way. And if you win a national championship, I guess you get your way. But now Georgia and Florida can apparently host recruits for their big cocktail party. Both coaches have been complaining about it, especially Kirby Smart, and how he can't host recruits on his biggest game of the season. But that is now changing, as apparently recruits are going to be able to come
out. How about they just man up and play home and aways?
That's what I would hope would happen. And there still has been talk that they throw away this game anyways, and like it does become just a home and home again. Now, maybe like them allowing recruits there changes that, and maybe all of a sudden Kirby Smart and Florida. Who the hell's coaching Florida? I just went blank on his name. Billy Napier. Maybe they just agree that, like, hey, yeah, we'll keep playing this because we can have recruits. Because I would imagine that'd be a pretty good atmosphere to have recruits on. I would worry that, hey, if they're between Georgia and Florida, you know. I
mean, it's a big party. Yeah, yeah. Those are their two teams that are really fighting for them.
Whose sideline do you send them? I would still rather have them in front of a home crowd, though. Don't get me wrong. Like, I'd rather have, if I'm recruiting for Georgia, have them at Sanford and for a big game against someone like Florida.
Couple thoughts here. So you're not in favor? You're not happy about this?
Yeah, I don't think they should be able to have recruits because that's been the rule. Is like no neutral site games.
I'm very happy about this.
Okay.
I always have appreciated and enjoyed the world's largest outdoor cocktail party, which I guess is just like the world's largest party now.
Yeah, they
didn't drop the cocktail.
But also feel like it's not factually correct. I feel like there's plenty of music festivals that is bigger than the
exactly. You got to keep the outdoor party cocktail now. Party, but. Yeah. I've always been a huge fan of that, and it looked like they were trending away from it because they consistently complain about losing that recruiting weekend, losing that home game. So if this is what it takes to keep that game in Jacksonville and to keep that neutral site, I'm in favor of it. I like having that neutral site game, and I don't really see it being an advantage either. I would say it would be a deterrent. Like if Tennessee and Florida are both competing for the same four-star prospect, I would much rather they host him at a neutral site where he doesn't get the campus feel and the game day feel and the feel of an entire full swamp. I would much rather that he's at a neutral site 50-50 game than at a home game if we're competing against Florida for a guy too. So, I don't think that's any kind of advantage.
Okay.
I think it would be harder to make a visit successful if it's not at your own place. I don't even know if you would really want to have guys come on an official visit to that game.
Yeah, and they're still not allowed to have contact, so they're just allowed to leave tickets, so I don't know. Like,
oh, so just unofficial? Like,
they're allowed to give recruits tickets to the game, okay. Recruits and families. Like, I don't know, does that make it just an unofficial visit, basically? Okay, so that kind of changes things, because obviously you get a limited number of official visits.
Which is, at the end of the day, not a big deal. And if it helps keep this game in Jacksonville, which I love. I know you said they can just man up and play home and home. I like cool little side neutral site games that have some sort of tradition to them. I don't like playing in Jerry World or in Atlanta just for the sake of doing it. Just like when teams just wear black uniforms for the sake of doing it. Like I think it's dumb when you do gimmicky things just to be gimmicky. But when there's some sort of tradition or some sort of purpose behind it, I think it's fun. So I always do look forward to when those two teams play in Jacksonville.
I just think it's unfair. Like with in the Big 12, I know that Texas and Oklahoma have done that forever. At the fair.
Awesome game,
right? But I would also say that it's a little bit different because in the Big 12, like who is the usual third team that's competing?
At least, when
the teams were good. To me, the Big 12 has always been Texas or Oklahoma, right? Like it's pretty much one of those teams is going to win. And I know it's changed the last couple of years, and I know Texas has been bad and all that, but like. Especially like during its heyday, the 2000s, early 2010s, like it was Texas and Oklahoma. There was no real third team, especially when you look and say that like schedules became balanced and there's no divisions. But for like here in the SEC East, like I know that we haven't really been in a position to worry about it in the recent history because we haven't been competing for the East. But it's 100% advantage for Georgia or Florida to not have to play an extra road game in those years. They get to drop a road game, right? When they're the home team, like they only have three road games in conference, is that right?
Yeah, I think so.
I think that's a huge advantage for teams.
But it's not like you're
teams.
Gaining a home game, so it's not like you're switching out a road game for an extra home game.
Well, I know, but road games are hard. Like the road games are the hardest thing in college football. Like road games are the hardest thing to win. Like we know the emotion of home games and like how guys play above their heads.
Do you have a problem with Arkansas playing A&M in Jerry World every year? Like, do you have a problem with that neutral site game that's traditional?
I will say that I haven't simply because it doesn't affect me. Now, if I was an Arkansas or an A&M fan, I might care. Or if I was a team, that was competing with them in the West, I would say, traditionally, A&M and Arkansas aren't going to be competing for the West Championship, right? It's usually going to be Alabama or LSU. So that one matters less. Whereas in the East, it's almost always going to come down to Georgia or Florida.
But it still balances out. Like,
what do you mean?
Well, sure, I guess I don't know who has the home game this year.
Georgia has the home game this year.
So,
which means they have three road games in the SEC, if I'm doing my math correctly.
Shucks, they have three road games in the SEC. Well, no, they should have four road games in the SEC if they're the ones that is the home game.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
So Florida only has three.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, shucks, well.
Which is even worse for me.
Florida only has three road games instead of four, but conversely, like, oh, Georgia doesn't get the advantage of having an extra home game.
Right, but again, I think
so. It goes both ways.
Well, no, but I think the benefit of avoiding a road game to me just outweighs.
I agree that it outweighs.
Home game thing. Like, if you have half the fans there, like you're in fine shape.
I mean, I agree. It outweighs it, but I wouldn't say it significantly outweighs it enough for it to be a deterrent.
So. I mean, I disagree. I think going on the road changes things drastically compared to a neutral site game. And again, if you look at Florida, this year they play at Tennessee, at A&M, and at Vandy. That's their only three road games.
Jeez.
Now, is Florida in a position to really take advantage of that this year? I would say no. Like, I don't think Florida is in a position to compete for the East, right?
Mm-hmm.
They have a chance to compete for second?
Yeah.
Sure, I mean, I guess. I think so.
If they have a good year.
Right.
You know, if everything falls in line for them.
They have the ability to do that. And, like, is it an accomplishment, though? Like, am I mad if Florida finishes ahead of us? I mean, at the end of the day, no, especially if Tennessee beats Florida. But next year, like, Georgia, like, you saw, it helped them win a national championship last year, I think.
I don't remember that. How close was that game?
I mean, I don't really remember it either, and I don't think Florida was very good because you know, they obviously fired Dan Mullen.
So did it really help them win a national championship?
If they would have had to play that game in the swamp, it would have been tougher. Or if, you know, you play a different, you know, a road game, like, that would have been tougher. They played three road games last year, and the road games last year.
I mean, what we generally say that being the home team is a 3-point swing.
That's in the NFL, but I think in college it's more like a touchdown swing.
Okay, well, I mean, they did.
I mean, it hasn't been
they
like
beat Florida 34-7.
No, I understand that. I understand that. And again, last year, but only having three road games helps. I'm sorry, it does. And if you want to throw Georgia Tech in at the end of the year, sure, whatever. But like at Vandy, at Tennessee, and at Auburn has to be the easiest road schedule that an SEC team or any team has ever had in a national championship season.
At Tennessee, at Vandy, at Auburn?
Yeah. That has to be the easiest road schedule an SEC team's ever had to win a national championship.
Probably.
I mean, three games, and again, two of them were against teams, which Tennessee was fine, whatever. But Auburn was bad last year, too. Like, those are the three easiest games you can have.
Probably. Like, I'm trying to think back to
three easiest, but you know what I mean.
The teams like that have other SEC teams that have won it, and it's been LSU and Alabama, so they automatically had a harder road schedule just being in the West.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but last year was the year that Florida almost beat Alabama, right? Or was that 2 years ago?
No, that was last year when it was right before we played them, too, where Emory Jones just spent two quarters looking like a god.
Yeah, no, he killed that game. Yeah, he lost 31-29. So I know by the time they played that game, it was a different Florida team, and they'd kind of given up. But, like, they went toe-to-toe in Florida against the number one team in the country, you know, Alabama. So
yeah, I mean,
that game
Alabama
would've been,
jumped out to, like, a big lead and then hold on.
Yeah, I was going to say it was –
like, Alabama just kind of took their foot off the gas.
It was 21-9 at half, so
it was a young team, and like sometimes a young team, if you get out to that early lead, like you can coast a little bit. Yeah. And I think really it was just a valuable lesson for Alabama more than Florida.
I mean, Ben was
super great.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know.
Ben was up 21-3 in the first quarter. Like, they did do that, and then Florida was able to kind of chip away and get back in it, and eventually, you know, scored a touchdown and had a chance for the 2-point conversion to tie it. But I just,
how crazy would that have been if that would have just gone the other way last year?
Yeah, I mean,
would have really changed the complexion of the entire season.
I would say that Florida wouldn't have fallen apart. On the flip side, if Emory Jones didn't look as good as he did inexplicably in that game, like maybe Anthony Richardson was starting earlier and they could have saved the season. I don't know. Because like every time you did go to bench Emory Jones, you'd look and say, yeah, but remember those plays he was running around making at Florida or against Alabama? Which,
you know where Emory Jones is at now, right?
He went to.
Oh, it's gonna be fun, boys.
It's not Arizona State, is it?
It's Arizona State.
Oh,
nice.
Oh, wait, is it Arizona? No, it's Arizona State.
Thank God I got that right.
I am pretty impressed you got that right.
Thank God I got that right.
But you know how fun that's gonna be to watch him have like 250 rushing yards against Oregon State at 11 p.m. on ESPN2.
I don't know how fun that's going to be because Arizona State's in a lot of trouble and Herm Edwards is about to get fired. So that season could get
also
really
like
ugly pretty quickly, I think.
We just completely let that story go away.
Yeah.
I'm sure it'll come back around when people get punished. But I remember that was going to be some huge bombshell news, like
then we
crazy
got it.
Story. And then we're like, oh, okay, that doesn't sound not like Herm Edwards. All right, whatever. We still don't care about Arizona State.
I was going to say, we got him. I was like, oh, it's Arizona State, and Jake the Snake Plummer ain't walking through those doors. And I like Herm Edwards, so I didn't want to, like, pile on him. He doesn't know what he's doing.
I don't
like
Herm.
I thought it was a stupid hire, but then, like, they were pretty good the first couple of years. I was like, am I just stupid? Because it seems to be going pretty well. But then it's like, no, there you go. It's the stupid hire. And
he's
then,
like, our idea is to turn a college football program into an NFL team.
Yeah, but also, like, I'm not, like, good enough to be an NFL coach anymore, so, like, this isn't going well. And then I'm going to get my agent hired to be, like, the AD, and then, like, we're just going to make it even weirder. And speaking of Arizona State and Florida, so Emory Jones is there, but Florida did have a foot injury to their receiver, Ricky Purcell, who transferred from Arizona State and I guess was kind of in line to be their best receiver, right? Or at least
there
one
was
of.
I mean, from what I was reading, there's been a lot of good buzz about him up until, you know, the injury, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, he 48 catches, 580 yards last year.
In which, like, Jacob Copeland, he transferred to Maryland.
He's the guy that kind of got kicked out, right? Or like Napier process pretty early on in the process.
And I'm trying to think, what other receiving depth do they really have? I think that could be an issue. And for a quarterback that's already has questions on his accuracy side of things, I mean, he's going to be working with mid-tier receivers.
And I do feel like looking at this picture of Ricky Purcell, or Purcell, however you pronounce it, he has the look of a guy that you would want to hate, probably. Yeah. Just looks very hateable. I would hate to see him catching touchdowns in Neyland Stadium.
Skinny white dude that looks like he should be making TikToks.
With a chin strap, beard, and earrings. Yeah,
I bet he has the perm with the fade on the sides.
No, he doesn't.
And the dangly cross earring.
No,
I bet
you're wrong
you,
there. These look just like stud earrings.
I bet
at least
he's up there. I'm a savage.
At least in this picture right here, he's just got earrings, like studs, and like just a regular, like kind of messy comb over type of thing. And a chin strap beard.
Hilarious. I would like to imagine that Billy Napier and Herm Edwards traded.
It's like, yeah, you take Emory, I'll take the receiver.
Give us the Wyatt boy, we'll give you Emory Jones.
But he suffered a foot injury at practice on Tuesday, and he'll be sidelined for an unknown period of time. So, like, I don't know how bad the injury is, but we're what? I mean, let's just call it 50 days away from Tennessee, Florida. 52 days away.
They're about to say from the football season. I was like, damn, it's a little awkward.
No. Because we got to get, what, 2 September, and then we got to get to September 24th. That's basically where, what? I mean,
7, 21. Oh, wait, no. 7, 14, 21, 28, 35, 42, 43, 44. 45 days.
Okay.
You like that? Counting by touchdowns there, so I didn't mess it up.
Good job by you. Foot injury, I mean, it could be healed in 45 days, sure. I mean, it can't be. Or he could, you know, fall behind and not
depends
be
on the
speed
severity,
and not be ready
to
go. Right, exactly. Like, so just some news and notes there. I just hate the schedule in the SEC. I hate it to my core. I hate that Kentucky gets to play Mississippi State every year. I hate that Florida and Georgia never get to have to go on the road to play that game. That some of them get 3 road games a year. It's stupid, and it makes me mad because we have to play Alabama every year.
It's a love-hate thing for me.
It's a hate-hate thing for me.
Because I do love that some of our traditional rivalries are preserved. But, God, I hate that they're Alabama and, you know, Florida, Georgia, and we're always playing them, and other schools have years that get pretty light schedules or that they get, you know, the advantage of having clear wins where they can get to 8, 9, 10 wins. So it is a love-hate thing, but we're 2 years away from seeing it all change anyway?
Every time I see the little graphic of last time a team's won 10 games and Tennessee's down all the way like 2007, like Kentucky gets to say they did it last year, and I was like, well, you play Alabama instead of Mississippi State, and let's see how that goes, even though they did lose to Mississippi State last year, right? But either way, point remains.
No, did they lose to Mississippi State?
I believe they did. Did they not? Weren't they all on a little bit of a losing streak when they played us? Didn't they lose to Georgia, Mississippi State, and us like 3 games in a row?
I think it was Mississippi State.
Okay, yeah. No, it was two years ago. Mississippi State only scored a safety against Kentucky. I had it backwards in my head.
Oh, yeah. I remember that one, yeah.
I was thinking about that.
Yeah, they lost 31-17 to Mississippi State the week before they played us, after Georgia kind of beat them down and roughed them up. That is one of the storylines or the stories that's coming down the chute that I am most excited to see what they do with, and it is the SEC like future scheduling.
I mean,
and, like, how it's going to change.
Massive for Tennessee.
Well, it's going to be massive because at the very least, you're not going to play Alabama and Georgia every
year.
And some people might get mad about that and like, hey, it's tradition, hey, it's history, but everyone's so excited about the trip to LSU for a reason. It's because we haven't been there in 12 years, and that's stupid that you can be in the same conference with somebody and not have a trip there for 12 years.
I'll be really sad to see potentially, you know, like a yearly Alabama game go, or a yearly Florida game go, or a yearly Georgia game go, or all 3.
Yeah.
But it'll feel a whole lot better at the end of that first season when you look back and realize you didn't have to play Alabama that year or Georgia that year, and you can have a path to a better record and to double-digit wins.
I always say like that I want to see it change, but you're right. It will be kind of sad. I could do really without
sad.
The Alabama game, but like
the third Saturday in October means a lot to me. Which
Florida means
I don't even
to me.
Have like vivid memories of beating Alabama.
You have
that's
zero
how
memories
young I am
of beating Alabama. I would imagine
that was 2006, right?
Yeah, I would imagine you have zero memories of that.
I have vivid memories of Cody blocking that field goal.
Well, yeah, we lost that game.
That was
bad. Yeah, we lost in painful fashion. You didn't realize how
that
painful it was at the
around.
Time, but yeah,
I cried.
Hour one in the books, hour two on deck. Stick with us as Talk Sports on Fan Run Radio.